I'm Maria Dudzak, and coming up this Friday is a presentation at the Southeast Alaska Discovery Center, part of their Friday Night Insight program. Gerald Smith is a paleontologist and fish biologist at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. He will be presenting 10 million years of salmon evolution and their future in a changing world. Also joining us this morning, artist and ichthyology and paleontology enthusiast and expert.
Yes.
Ray Troll. So welcome to both Gerald Smith and Ray Troll. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And let's start off, Gerald Smith, tell folks a little bit about you and your background.
Well, I was born in California, raised in Utah, and educated in Utah at first, and then ended up getting a PhD in Michigan, then taking different jobs around the country as a professor and ending up back in Michigan in 1969, where I study recent fish of the Great Lakes and also fossil fish of Western North America, fossil freshwater fish.
And do you do a lot of, I don't know, would it be called archaeology, like digs looking for things?
Paleontology.
There right. We go. Thank you. correct me, please. Explain that, kind of like that. What is your experience in all that?
Well, every year we go out to Idaho or Oregon, sometimes Nevada, California, and Utah, and search old lake beds from the distant past to try to find whatever scraps of fish bone or fish fossils that we can find there. And then we take those back to the lab and identify them and write them up so we know something about what lived where and when.
Okay. And you're at the University of Michigan. Are you also a teacher?
Yes. Yes, I teach I'm retired now, but I still teach in the Ecology and Evolution Department and also in the Geology Department.
How often are you able to do these digs? I imagine it would be kind of challenging being both at the university and also getting out there.
We use our summer vacations out west.
Working vacations.
And how do you, Ray Troll and Gerald Smith, know each other? What is your connection here?
Well, it's actually one of those little Ketchikan stories in that it's a small world kind of story. And Keith Smith moved here a number of years ago. Jerry, how long ago did your son Keith move here? It all blurs together, but couple decades now or almost.
Yeah, probably 15 years.
Yeah, 15 more. Years at least. Keith's in the other room right now. But anyway, so Keith Smith, well-known here in town, and I would talk to various ichthyologists. I'd go to these fish meetings and stuff and began to hear this name. Well, if you want to know about salmon, you got to talk to Jerry Smith. You know, hey, if you're really into paleontology and salmon, you got to talk to Jerry Smith. And so one year, I think it was maybe about 10 years ago, I actually met you at one of these meetings. And you are the spitting image, your son is a spitting image of you, I should say. You're easy to spot from across the room. And so Jerry and I got to know each other, and I've dreamed of the day that I think Dr. Smith here is one of the world's foremost authorities on salmon and western fishes of North America. But I always thought I just would love to hear him speak at length about the evolution of this fish that drives the economy up here, and lo and behold, this Friday that dream will come true, and I'm really looking forward to it. So it's at 7 o'clock on Friday night after everybody's feasted on turkeys all day. But
I've known Ray, as he mentions, for about 10 years from his visits to the fish meetings, and I've always found that I can learn a lot more about salmon by talking with him.
Well, wow. So it's a dialogue. And actually, so the cool thing is that Keith, you know, grew up hunting for fossils. So every now and then Keith and I do, how's your dad doing? So, but one of the, my short attention span, I can dig into these things, but I'm usually after sort of these showbiz kind of, wow, these are cool, underappreciated animals. And one of the creatures that really led me to Dr. Smith is I started reading up on saber-tooth salmon. And when I first heard about them, I thought, no, it's a joke. People still think that I'm joking about this animal, but as usual with a lot of these critters, especially prehistoric critters, you find that there's precious few people in the world that really have studied them and worked on them. And I stumbled across this animal about 20 years ago, and digging around in museums, and people told me that Jerry was the guy to talk to about this animal. But it's a gigantic prehistoric salmon. And I want to bring these things to life. And the only way you can do that is to work closely with scientists like Jerry. And he walked into my studio yesterday and brought me a salmon skull that he had prepared and out in Ann Arbor, and showed me all these things about the skull that I did not know, and blew me away with all kinds of salmon factoids. And so, yeah, he's going to share that with the town on Friday night, but also informally today, too, at lunch down at O'Brien's. Anyone that's – I just know there's a lot of salmon people here in this town. And it's not just all about the saber-tooth salmon, but it's all about this incredible fish that, like I said, drives the whole economy up here.
So, Jerry Smith, you're making this presentation, 10 Million Years of Salmon Evolution, Their Future in a Changing World. Don't want to give everything away since we want people to go to the presentation, but what are maybe some of the findings that you have discovered about the evolution of salmon?
Well, the main thing we discovered probably 10 or 15 years ago was that salmon as a group are much, much older than anyone thought. Prior to that time, there was a theory advanced by Canadians that salmon got their evolutionary start with the ice ages. But then in our work in Idaho and Oregon, we found some that were 6 million years old, so that kind of blew the 1 million year theory away. And since then, this creature that Ray has talked about, the saber-toothed salmon, have been found along the coast of California going back perhaps as old as 14 million years. And it's not a particularly primitive one. It's a pretty advanced one. So the evolution of salmon has to go back to 15 or 20 million years ago, judging from that.
And we think of salmon, at least I do, of something of the Pacific Northwest or the North Atlantic. Did they obviously had a much broader range, it sounds
well,
like.
Well, there is a North Atlantic group and a North Pacific group. And so here we're just concerned with the five species of salmon in North America and a couple of others, small ones in Japan, plus their close relatives, the western trout, rainbow and steelheads, and cutthroat trout.
So the fossils you found in places like California, are they more trout, or the salmon were that far south?
Salmon and trout are both in California, and during the ice ages, when much of the Columbia Basin and much of Alaska and the Northwest was uninhabitable because of all the ice, salmon went as far south as Mexico.
Mexican, yeah. Well, one of the other things that Jerry and I have talked about over the years is a decade or more ago, one of the deified fish around here, too, is the steelhead. And there was some work, and it previous to some of the work that had been done, that had all been, it had been referred to as a different genus altogether, a different animal. But now, through some of the work that you've done and some of your colleagues, steelhead are an Archorhynchus. You did some of the paperwork, and it became, instead of Samo gardnerii, it became, excuse me while I geek out here for just a minute. But anyways, officially, you can think of, officially, this is where it gets a little difficult, the common language and scientific language, but basically steelhead are salmon as well. And rainbow trout, rainbow and steelhead are basically the same thing, but cutthroats are also in the same group, Archorhynchus, right?
Yes.
If you want to get technical about it, the western trout are salmon.
The cutthroats are the most primitive known members of the whole group.
Wow.
And but in the 1870s, steelheads were brought back to Michigan and introduced into the Great Lakes. And it quickly turned out that from the same genetic population, some of them stayed in the creeks and became rainbow trouts, and others ran into the Great Lakes and back into the streams to spawn, so that they had salmon life histories, but they were rainbow trouts genetically.
And I imagine you have to hunt for these fossils. How do you know where to look, in a sense?
Well,
because probably you have certain sites, but then, Rachel, you mentioned, you know, they found this new species and such. So where are you going, and what guides you there?
We look at what's published about geology, about Earth history, and search out lake beds and river beds that have been deposited in the West, especially. And most of the work is done in the West, primarily because it's desert areas, so the soil washes away and not covered by plants. And so it's
pesky
easy.
Plants get in the way. Yeah.
Right. It's easy to find lake beds because they have a special color and texture and form on the earth, on the land surface. So those have become known to geologists and other paleontologists, especially mammal paleontologists. And so, to some extent, fish. We in our fish group follow around the mammal paleontologists, and there are probably 10 times as many as of those because of everyone's interest in mammals. So we find these beds, and we set up a camp and carry water in there in our truck and stay for a few weeks, and basically crawling around on the dirt looking for fish bones.
I would imagine sometimes you're not successful. It seems like it would be hard to spot things.
That's right. There are, well, for example, this May in Oregon, there were quite a few days in which we found either no fish bone or just one or two bones. So some days are very disappointing like that.
Did you go back? I'm just curious. Did you go back to, have you revisited any of the spots where the saber-toothed salmon was found?
Yeah, the type specimen, that big skull that mm-hmm. we'll talk about in a couple of days, was found in the Warden area of Oregon near the Pacific coast. And we've been back to that spot and found other bones of the same kind of creature in riverbeds there. But they no more big skulls like that
no
beautiful
more
one.
And you said this is a really large salmon. How big are we talking?
We've had many discussions on this, and I've
been... You don't know because you only saw have part of it? Is that...
No, well, there's... No? The first specimen that was found is identified as such. Actually, it was kind of a composite individual, but then they did find pretty much a complete skull, and there's skeletal
right.
material. So that, and that was found in eastern Oregon. And that, from you do... That's pretty much a lot of the fish, but you can see it's about a 7 foot long fish, 6-7 feet,
right.
You know, and then, but some of the vertebrae that have been found down in San Diego area, Los Angeles area, and I'm holding up my fingers here, you can see this on the radio, but are marlin sized vertebrae. So Jerry, we were corresponding last year, sending Jerry some of these pictures from the museum collections that I'd seen where these things even got bigger. And so we went back and forth, and the calculations show that.
The largest vertebrae are almost 3 inches in diameter. And so by going through our fish collection at Michigan and pulling out all of the salmon skeletons and measuring the vertebrae, and then plotting that on a graph against the body length, we make a curve, and extending that curve out to a vertebra that's almost 3 inches gets us to a fish that's probably 8 feet long. And then by looking at the, well, I started out at 7.
I always try to say, but.
They're debating. No,
it's bigger. I'm sort of more the lying fisherman that wants to stretch the size of a wee bit.
Well, Ray has convinced me that the important thing is that they probably weighed 1,000 pounds. So if you can imagine a salmon that weighed 1,000 pounds, and that's a pretty firm figure because these fish are adapted to eating plankton, just like basking sharks and whale sharks. So they eat the same kind of food, and they probably grew at about the same rate, but they stopped growing after 2 or 3 years and returned to fresh water to spawn, and that's where we find their fossils pretty widespread in Oregon, Washington, and California.
And that's what's incredible, too. We've been going back and forth about this just actually in the last 24 hours about if you're getting to be eight-ish, 10-ish feet long and 1,000 pounds, they're doing that in 3, maybe 4 years, which is incredible.
Yeah, it was hard to believe, although it's something we've been struggling with for years because people don't want to believe that. But in fact, that involves the same kind of food habits and the same kind of growth rate as a basking shark.
So maybe there's actually some kind of real life lessons that could be gleaned from this, or immediately we start thinking about giant fish fillets and how can we get that these salmon actually can do that. They can't get that big and they can't grow that fast. I mean, but that's the relevance of paleontology, right? I mean,
by looking back in the past at what these fish were like in the past, we can see that they evolved to much more diversity than we appreciate now. But they did that during a period of time, say 12 million years ago, when the Earth was much, much warmer. There was far less ice locked up in the Arctic and in Antarctic. And so the rivers, because the oceans were much higher, these fish had big river drainages to swim up into. And so it's the fact that 8-foot fish got pretty far inland into Oregon is an indication that the rivers were much larger and that at least at some times there weren't volcanic dams. And we know also one interesting thing is that these fish got way up into southern Idaho and there became landlocked. And so there is a small version, a dwarf version, of the saber-toothed salmon that they were only 2 feet long. And we have a number of specimens of those from two localities in Idaho. So that's another indication of the diversity and also what's probably fairly rapid evolution.
I imagine they're obviously very different from modern-day salmon. How do you know they are, in fact, salmon as opposed to some other fish?
Well, that's the curious part, is that the jaws and the basket of feeding tissues in the throat are quite modified for the unusual food habits. But the rest of the skull bones, the top of the skull, the sides of the skull, the gill covers, and even other features of the bones indicate that they're close relatives of sockeye salmon. So they're not they are ancient, but they're not primitive.
Very good. Go ahead, Ray.
Sister species of the sockeye, reaching 10 feet, 1,000 pounds. Just think of those fillets. Think of the fight. Think of what would you use as a fly to catch one of the. Yeah. What would you use for bait? I'm sorry. That's where my mind goes. That's what I do. These scientists tolerate me barely. I think he's looking at me skeptically. But.
Have the two of you ever worked together?
Well, on the saber-tooth salmon. And actually, I recently. Yeah. It's all kind of a blur. It's been a busy year here, but earlier this fall, I painted a large mural down at the University of Oregon, and where they have the type specimen, the first specimen, the saber-toothed salmon. It's been in the back rooms all these years, but now, actually through some of the work I've been doing and some of the work I've been doing with Jerry. We painted a big mural of it. It's going to debut in February, but we also have a life-size sculpture and of the animal that my friend Gary Staub did. So I did a mural. It's at the University of Oregon Museum of Natural History, and this is in the permanent display. But Jerry was a key part in critiquing the sculpture as it was done and the painting, and we're forever moving things around, and you know, the scale size and all that kind of stuff, literally the scale of the scales. How big would the scales be? Where do the fangs go? They have these large teeth in their top jaw. They're basically two fangs, but they're more dirk-shaped rather than saber-shaped. And the lower jaw is this massive triangular-shaped thing, and they only have, there's basically no other teeth, right, Jerry?
Right. They've lost most of their teeth, like you might expect from something that eats plankton. They had no reason for having a mouth full of teeth the way other salmon do, because they lived on plankton. But on the other hand, like other salmon, when the breeding season arrived, then the adults have those big fighting teeth.
So people frequently, you know, say, saber-toothed salmon, oh, it's going to kill you. But no, they're just mellow, big plankton feeders. But, you know, it's showbiz, too. So
it looks impressive.
But yeah. those big teeth are more than 2 inches long.
So be careful nonetheless.
Yes.
Should you encounter one.
Yes, they are built to stake out their territory.
They went extinct between 3 and 4 million years ago.
So we shouldn't have to worry about them now.
Right.
Unless there's some secret pocket under the ocean.
I wish. I hope.
You can still hope for that. So, Jerry Smith, the presentation Friday night, 7 p.m. at the Southeast Alaska Discovery Center. What can people expect? I mean, part of it, you'll be speaking. Will there be images?
Yes. I'll have slides and some of the pictures that Ray has sent me over the years and some of the graphs that we've worked on together, plus pictures of fossils and of trout and salmon, and an accounting of the times in the past when these creatures lived. And so I'll try to tie it together as a story that is prehistory.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you to both of you for being here. Anything else you want to add?
Well, like I said, if there's anybody who really wants to geek out a little bit on the science, informally today at O'Brien's, we'll be down there for lunch. So Jerry and I and Keith and your grandson will be there.
And what time would that be?
At noon. High noon.
High noon. Okay.
Thanks.
Okay.
So
thanks,
much,
Maria.
Thank you very much for being here. Dr. Gerald Smith, a paleontologist and fish biologist at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, and Ray Troll, our local artist and ichthyology and paleontology enthusiast. Again, a presentation this Friday night, 7 p.m. at the Southeast Alaska Discovery Center, 10 million years of salmon evolution and their future in a changing world.